Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a stubborn orange stain on democracy to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the double standard.
So the double standard is one of those fairly easy to explain ones, really, because everyone knows what a double standard is. So not much to go into it.
And they kind of shout it out whenever it happens.
Yeah, and there's a lot of crossover with special pleading and to some extent tu quoque as well. But I think the main difference from special pleading is that there is not really any pleading going on here. There isn't any attempt to pretend that there's a reason the rules should be different. It's just treating one situation completely different to a very similar situation because it is more convenient for you or you know, works in your favour or in favour of your argument.
Yeah.
So our first Trump example. This was Trump on the 9th of November 2016 at 2:50 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I'd like to take this moment to thank some of the people who really helped me with this, what they are calling tonight, very, very historic victory.
So just a few hours after the polls closed, the media were calling the election for Trump and Clinton had phoned to concede. And he was perfectly happy to accept that. As he had won. But 2020, November 8th, 2020, he tweeted, "Since when does the lamestream media call who our next president will be? We have all learned a lot in the last 2 weeks." So this instance, because he lost, the media doesn't say who the president is. No. We have to wait until all the votes have been counted and it's all been tabulated. And obviously everyone on the right was saying that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everyone was saying that. All of the pundits and Giuliani and everyone, all of whom were completely happy to accept the media calling the election in 2016.
Because it worked in their favour.
Absolutely.
And they were just going, oh, yeah, well, of course he is, you know. So, and in fact, they were waiting for the earliest possible, who's going to call it first? And then we'll declare our success then.
Yeah.
I mean, they tried it this time and they kind of went, well, yeah, you know, if you only take the score after the first 20 minutes, we were winning. Let's just stop it then.
There's no attempt to explain why it's different in this instance.
No.
It's just, we don't accept the media telling us who's president and calling the race. We have to wait.
And all they're doing, they don't. And that's the other thing, is that the media doesn't call the race. What they do is report the results from the polls.
Yeah.
So they just kind of put them conveniently because they're all in one place, like they're on your TV. So rather than have to go around every single state and ask them, what the TV does is compile them and put them on a nice map.
It's a lot quicker. And they go, Steve Bornacki just tells you what's going on and then,
And then you just know, you know, you haven't got to go and ask, go and knock on the door at in Texas and ask them, have they finished counting again?
Yeah.
And did people point that out?
Oh, yeah.
Have they pointed it out at the time?
Yeah.
Did it make any difference?
Doesn't make any difference. And nothing makes any difference, does it?
No.
It's all meaningless.
We've learned a lot in the last 83 episodes. It's freaking absolutely pointless. You can counter it all you like. People just
won't make any difference.
Yeah. Won't make any difference. They'll just do it again. And they go, wait a minute, you did that already. You just did that. Yeah.
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 Yeah, so our next Trump-related example comes from the call that Biden had with Ghani, Prime Minister of, President of Afghanistan. And what he said at the time was, we need to basically put on a good front to say that the holding back the Taliban is going well. Because what we need is a plan. We need to know what your plan is to hold them off. And meanwhile, we need to let everyone know that, you know, we're doing everything we can and it's going fine.
Yeah.
And if you have a plan, we'll help with that plan by providing air support.
Yep.
The right wing, especially in this case, Kayleigh McEnany, decided that this was a quid pro quo. And all of a sudden, that is impeachable when it absolutely wasn't impeachable last time. And she said this on Fox's Outnumbered.
President Biden said he needed a plan from the Afghan president about how to change the perception. And he went on to, it seems, leverage military aid over this plan, saying, quote, "We will continue to provide close air support if we know what the plan is and what we are doing." That seems like a quid pro quo. And this transcript, to me, it's the first time I've said it during this presidency. It seems like an impeachable offense.
So she's drawing a direct comparison between that phone call and the phone call that Trump had with the Ukraine president.
Which they denied happened.
Absolutely.
At
well,
the time.
She was saying, as was most of the people in favor of Trump, saying, yeah, there's nothing wrong with this. He can do what he wants. Yeah. It's not impeachable. Now she's saying this is exactly what Trump was accused of, and now it is impeachable.
And where are all the Democrats going, this is impeachable? And it isn't the slightest.
It's not the same at all.
No, it's just going, what's your plan? Let us know what your plan is, and then we'll be able to provide you military support, air support or whatever, fitting in with the plan. It's not... It's but not, even, I won't give you any kind of aid unless you dig up some dirt on my opposition.
No, that's the thing. Even if you read it as our air support is contingent on you providing us with information about your plan.
Yeah.
That's still not the same, because the quid in that quid pro quo is how are you going to help yourself in this situation? Yeah. Whereas the quid in Trump's one was I want you to claim that you're investigating my rival. Something that will personally benefit me politically.
Exactly.
And for that, I will give you, military aid. Whereas Biden's is, tell me how I can help you. Tell me what's going on.
And then I will help you, we can provide you with the stuff, but we need to know what are the tactics that we're fitting in.
We need to know that we're not just sending our air support into chaos.
Yeah. You know, otherwise, because that's what you need for a military plan. A plan. That's,
And
so why, what they really are. And so not only is it, they're accusing the Democrats of double standards by saying, oh, you see, they all jumped up and down when Trump did it. But they are also not applying the double standard, which was... Or we're not applying the standard
They're
not doing that. And what they're doing is retrospectively saying what Trump did was actually impeachable after all.
Yeah, it's multi-layered, this one.
Yeah. So, and they're not kind of... So, you could just turn around to them and say, let's just play what you said last time when he wasn't impeachable. Now you're saying he was, and therefore Biden is, or what?
Yeah.
And I haven't said it this presidency, but this looks impeachable to me. Like, I'm just waiting for the moment for each presidency where I can say that looks like an impeachable offence.
And given that this fallacy basically just relies on people being hypocrites, and we're talking about politics, there was an embarrassment of riches in terms of things I could have chosen as examples. Obviously, McConnell's double standards for when it's okay to put a Supreme Court justice in all kinds of things like that. So I've only got one more example, and it's about the difference between believing in bodily autonomy when it's about vaccines compared to when it's about abortion. Right. And so my example is a tweet from Candace Owens, who says, "Not one person in my family will ever touch the COVID-19 vaccine. That is the decision we've made unabashedly as a family. Medical freedom is an individual right that should never be infringed upon, and any person who thinks otherwise has no place in our government." Which is a strong stance.
Somewhat ironic.
And many people replied saying, "Oh, brave of Candace to come out as pro-choice." But she was quick to damp that down and say, no.
No, we're
I'm
not
still very much, not that. This
not
side.
That. No.
Yeah, when we're talking about vaccines or whether I should wear a mask, no, that's my medical freedom. It's my body, my choice.
Yeah. But other people's, when it comes to other people's bodies and their choices, I'm quite happy that those are taken away. Yeah. Yeah. And also the fact that the other one that I noticed in there is about medical freedom as an individual right, but the right to appear in our government is down is down to me to choose.
yeah, absolutely.
So it's the rights of being
rights are
able
what
to
I
express
think they should
yourself.
Be.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, this is quite a nice one because it becomes a phrase that politicians use about each other, isn't it? They're saying you're just applying double standards or you're being hypocritical, when actually it's most of the time the person who's doing the hypocritic calling out are the hypocrites.
There's a lot of projection going on, And a thing you'll often hear from the right is something like, if the left didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards.
So
an accusation that is thrown around very widely.
Yeah.
And as I say, as it's politics, often probably fairly.
Quite not unexpectedly.
It's one of those things where it's all about the nuance. Because it's easy to look at a situation and say that's a double standard, but to point out either why those two things aren't the same, like in the case of the impeachment or the phone calls, it takes longer to explain. Someone has to actually be prepared to listen to you and accept your arguments, and so there's more nuance in that. So either explaining why those two situations aren't the same and should be treated differently, or to explain why you're not treating the two similar situations differently, actually. It just looks like you are, or something like that. There's often one of those bumper sticker problems where it's easy to say it and hard to dispute it, or takes longer to dispute it.
Yeah, especially in the face of somebody like, in the face of Candace Owens' face, where she can't even see what she's done within the same three lines of a tweet. You know, it takes other people to point it out, and they go, what have I said?
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, having got completely fed up with British politics since about 2016, I thought we'll go back to simpler and happier times to have a look at our examples of double standards being applied. Those far-off heady summer days of August 2011, where there were outbreaks of riots in major cities across the country. And this is how long ago it was. It was when rioters were apparently organising themselves over BlackBerry Messenger. And here's a clip of David Cameron, who's advocating a response to that fact.
Mr. Speaker, everyone watching these horrific actions will be struck by how they were organised via social media. Free flow of information can be used for good, but it can also be used for ill. So we are working with the police, the intelligence services and industry to look at whether it would be right to stop people communicating via these websites and services when we know they are plotting violence, disorder and criminality.
And that's still something they're still talking about to social media companies 10 years later. Yeah, but then, so we're fairly clear on his position. And here's Eric Olander on France 24 reminding us of Cameron's response in February 2011 to the social media-fueled Arab Spring riots in North Africa and the Middle East.
The Prime Minister, when he was in Kuwait, talking to people about the social network, saying it belongs to a new generation for whom technology, the internet and social media is a powerful tool in the hands of citizens, not a means of repression. It belongs to the people who've had enough of corruption, of having to make do with what they're given, of having to settle for second best. Now, people will argue that what's happened in the streets of London are looters and what was happening in the streets of Cairo are pro-democracy, but the means of shutting down these networks when the pressure gets hot is exactly the same. It's ironic and it's hypocritical to the nth degree. Now, going into these other countries and telling their other dictators and other governments not to shut down these networks, when the pressure comes on themselves, they then turn to those same means.
I like the fact that he almost says, you know, one man's rebel is another man's freedom fighter. And in a way, I wondered to what extent the dissatisfaction with the status quo that was being felt by the rioters in Britain was similar And I wonder, there's a PhD thesis there, isn't there, about whether it was a global zeitgeist, and to a certain extent, part of it was the ability to communicate one-to-one and organise and be able to be in communication with one another to the extent that the older generation couldn't catch on to it. They didn't know what was going on, and they were out of touch. And that was part of the thing with the early riots in Egypt and so forth, was that actually the, and I think he acknowledged it, that the leaders there said we were that out of touch that we just didn't know what young people were saying. And what they were saying was we're not satisfied with the status quo and the haves and the have-nots, and the gaps got wider, and that's what all that was about. You know, it all got dismissed by Cameron as saying they're just looters and rioters, and whereas the people in the Arab Spring and the stuff in Tahrir Square that went on for weeks was all about freedom fighters and being able to use social media to express themselves and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. So, example two. So this is September 2012, actually, and I realised that Cameron, kind of quite delighted with it. Cameron really had a difficult premiership because there was all these things kind of just thrown on his plate, and he was as shit at dealing with them as Johnson is. And so in September 2012, Andrew Mitchell, who was then the Tory chief whip, who's kind of the flag bearer of Tory standards, he was reported to have had an altercation with the police officers at the gated entrance to Downing Street about being allowed to take his bicycle through the pedestrian gate. And here's an exchange between the then Labour leader, Ed Miliband, and David Cameron about this incident.
According to the official police report, a man claiming to be the chief whip called the police plebs, told them they should know their place and use other abusive language. Can the Prime Minister now tell us, did the Chief Whip use those words?
What the Chief Whip did and said was wrong, and that is why it is important that he apologised, and apologised properly. That apology has been accepted by the officer concerned, it's been accepted by the head of the Metropolitan Police.
If a yob in a city centre on a Saturday night abused a police officer ranting and raving, the chances are they'd be arrested and placed in the back of a police van. And rightly so. But while it's a night in the cell for the yobs, it's a night at the Carlton Club for the chief whip. Isn't that the clearest case there could be of total double standards? While everybody else loses their jobs, the chief whip keeps his. If you're a millionaire, you get a tax cut. If you're everybody else, you get a tax rise. They're totally out of touch. With this government, it's one rule for those at the top, another rule for everybody else.
It is shocking that politicians are treated differently from a yob in the street on a Saturday night. Yeah, yes, it's amazing, isn't it?
yeah. And it's, you know, a yob, an abusive yob with a bicycle at the end of Downing Street, you know, shouting at a policeman. It's appalling that they should be chucked in the back of the van. Either that or take the yob up the Carlton Club. It's the only way. Yeah, apology accepted, young man. Come this way. You're fine. Yeah. And what a relief to see how different things are now. One rule for them and one rule for us. That's the days gone by. That's right. And Andrew Mitchell, he wasn't sacked. You know, nobody ever is in the Tory party. But he later resigned, but not because of what he did, but because he was finding remaining in his position untenable in the face of the media storm. And you kind of think, well, this is a slightly troubling thing, isn't it? And then more examples of politics by opinion poll. There we go. So bringing us bang up to date-ish, May this year, Rachel Johnson went on Loose Women, a TV programme on ITV.
It's kind of like the British version of The View.
There you go. Talking about her podcast, Difficult Women. And actually the titles of both of those shows embrace and kind of weaponise the double standards that are applied to men and women. And here she is talking about the double standards applied to her brother, Boris Johnson.
Remind you what Angela Rayner said about this, because people point out she had a baby at 16, she's a grandmother, she wears stompy vegan boots. And she said, why aren't you focusing on the Prime Minister, who number of children, number of marriages, hair and suits and all the rest of it? And he as you say, he doesn't get scrutiny for those sorts of things. I think because that is who he is. It's, you know, he's never tried to hide anything. He's never tried to pretend he's anything else than who he is. And he's also resisted any, he's never used his private life on the public stage at all. It, for him, it remains private. And of course, it's a matter of speculation now he's Prime Minister. And I'm sure there is a double standard too.
Yes, we but just he has used legal restrictions to make sure it's private. He has resorted to lawyers and
Janet,
stuff like that to
Janet,
keep it private.
Listen, I think that you wouldn't ask him on Loose Women and talk to him about me. So I think from, you yeah, know, I think we can draw it to a close for that, on that note.
Oh, Rachel, we would really ask him on Loose Women. You've been asked about your brother, the Prime Minister, surely. I mean, we're not going to be the first to have done that.
See, I think in trying to excuse... So Angela Rayner, by the way, is a Labour MP who is, yeah, often accused of being, you know, a bit too manly with her boots and her the fact that she's a, you know, she was a mother at 16. She's the kind of person that Boris Johnson would have described as feckless in those. And now she's a grandmother or whatever, she's in her 30s. So she's spawned children that are also feckless in the right wing's eyes. So Rachel Johnson seems to be perpetuating several double standards by saying, well, you know, he gets away with that because that's just the way he is. Well, hang on a minute, that's just the way Angela Rayner is. But, yeah, and also, it's fucking appalling that he gets away with it being just the way he is. What, you know, kind of a misogynist woman-eater, you know, careless fucker, those scruffy bastard who doesn't give a shit about anybody. Yeah, and so we need to let him off. So if that's the standard by which we should apply our tolerance of his behaviour and appearance, why isn't that being applied to... So she's pointed out that there is a double standard applied and then applies another one on top of it in order to cover up the first one somehow. And then she goes on to say, well, he's never tried to hide anything. He's never used his private life in public to get on or anything like that. And Janet Street Porto, that voice we heard there, pointed out, no, he actually actively suppresses that in order to appear noble in that regard. He's got super injunctions.
His private life is a fucking mess.
It is. And it's and he takes out super injunctions, so you can't even know that he's got an injunction out to prevent you from asking about it. So it's, yeah, so that's, there you go. And then the last one, we said, well, you wouldn't have him on here to talk about me. So why have me on here talk about him? And you go, well, what? He's the fucking Prime Minister.
Yeah, she's shocked that sister. Anyone would ask about him.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, Janet Street Porter falls for that and goes, oh, yeah, fair enough. No, fuck off. And the presenter goes, what are you talking about? We're not the first to have you on. You're his fucking sister. Of course we're going to ask you about him. Uh-huh. With your double standards.
It's always fallacies. Your logic falls upon its knees. What's good for you's not good for us. With all your lies writ on the bus. Am I applying the same standards? Am I applying the same standards? If I'm not, then there'll be trouble. If I am, it will be double. So stop behaving like a child and using fallacies in the wild.
The clash there with should I stay or should I go? Which was, yeah, the song I immediately thought of because it has double in it.
And in the fallacy in the wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from 30 Rock. And this is an episode where Liz Lemon has just had a bit of a dalliance in her office with one of her male staff members.
And I took my reward.
Lemon, you need to end this now.
What? No, Jack, you were just talking about how you miss office hookups. That is a double standard.
Calm down.
I won't calm down. Women are allowed to get angrier than men about double standards.
Brilliant. There you go. There it is. Right there. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's excellent. And also, it is kind of, it raises another issue, which is that people are sometimes accused of double standards when they try to treat people equally or suggest that people should act equally in the same situation. Yeah. And that's not actually necessarily the case. Equality isn't necessarily about treating everyone the same. In the same way as often idiots will say things like, you know, why is there no White History Month, or why, when's National Men's Day when it's National Women's Day?
Yeah.
And there is a National Men's Day, incidentally.
Yeah.
But the accusation of, you know, how dare you raise a minority or an oppressed group up without also equally raising up the oppressors.
And that's called double standards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, that's what that is the... I wonder whether the notion of double standards comes from that kind of zero-sum mentality that you can't have, you know, I'm not willing to give my rights up to you.
Yeah, I lose something if you gain
mine. Yeah.
But yeah, in this case, Liz is justifiably angry about being accused of something which Jack has been telling her he was doing himself and misses doing. And yeah, women are often, or more often, subject to double standards. They are you know, treated differently in society, and equal treatment, the same treatment, isn't the same as kind of egalitarian treatment, essentially.
Yeah.
So our second example is from King of the Hill.
I just wanted to say you don't have to worry about me because I'm never going to have sex.
Oh, Bobby, now don't say that.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Well, yes, if you were my daughter, but you're my son.
Why is it not okay for girls, but it's okay for boys?
It's called the double standard, Bobby. Don't knock it. We got the long end of the stick on that one.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's called the double standard. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, don't ask too many questions. Just let it lie.
Go along with that one.
It works for us.
There aren't many. There aren't many of them. We're just going to have that one. Yeah. We're not even allowed to get as angry in this situation. Yeah. That's so good. Yeah. 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 I thought that's what you wanted. No. Yeah, it is the kind of thing that Lisa Simpson rails against constantly, isn't it? Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And so our final example is from, it's Wonder Woman 1984.
I thought we'd never speak of that again.
If I thought about this before choosing which fallacy to do, I would have obviously made this fallacy episode 84 instead of episode 83.
Oh, man.
But
we're done.
Yeah. Long-time listeners will know that we've talked about Wonder Woman 84 at length. Patreons will have heard us doing it.
Yeah.
But this is towards the end of the opening scene, so like 11 minutes into the film, where the entire opening scene, which is a kind of Olympian-type competition in Themyscira with a child, Diana, competing against grown-up Amazons, and she takes a shortcut in the race and then is upset when Antiope stops her from actually finishing the race.
You took the short path. You cheated, Diana. That is the truth. That is the only truth, and truth is all there is.
But I would have won if you didn't.
But you didn't. You cannot be the winner because you are not ready to win. And there is no shame in that. Only in knowing the truth in your heart and not accepting it. No true hero is born from lies.
She's very strong on the truth. Mm. She's saying it's, you know, truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. Truth is all there is. It's all that matters. No hero can, is born from lies.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important. Of course, she and Hippolyta have been lying to Diana her entire life up to this point about who she is, how she was born, who, you know, they've been saying that she was formed from clay because Hippolyta just really wanted a child. And not telling her that she is, first of all, a demigod. She's got a Zeus's daughter, and also the god killer who is going to go off and fight Ares, because they're worried about if she finds out who she is, she'll
go and do it.
She'll do it, and she'll alert Ares to her location and that, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we're not spoiling anything. I mean, even if we gave away the ending, we wouldn't really spoil Wonder Woman 84. But
it already done that for itself.
But it is very hypocritical, very double standardy of the Amazons to be raising this girl, lying completely about who she is and what her destiny is and how she came about, while constantly telling her truth is the only important thing.
Yeah.
No hero everything else is born from lies.
Yeah. Yeah. And irony of ironies, she is.
Literally,
you know, she doesn't. I mean, she doesn't turn out to be much of a hero. Not in this version. Not in this much of the film.
No. No.
No, not at all. Don't give me your, to be fair, nonsense. No. In this film,
I mean, if you buy in to the film, she is. She saves the world.
Right.
Ultimately.
And she fights a mad
just a bloke. With no power whatsoever. She is she saves everyone, but using ridiculous and stupid methods.
And it does, I guess it does sets the whole thing up, because she talks about the truth when she's broadcasting through her lasso at the end.
I mean, all this does is give her something to say during that scene. That scene would be the same if this didn't happen. Yeah. She would just be saying something different.
Something else.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference.
Anyway, we'll stop talking about Wonder Woman now. But yeah.
Let's say. If you're interested, there is a 3-episode series in
our 8 hours of discussion of Wonder Woman 84.
Of Wonder Woman, moment by moment, frame by frame. Yeah.
Yeah. Just become a patron. Patreon.com/ftrump.
And then you can choose not to listen to that.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks.
I love the game. It's a great game. I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I usually read out 3 Trump quotes, 2 of which are real and 1 I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news. But I'm doing something a bit different this time.
Are you?
I am, because Rudy Giuliani talked at a 9/11 memorial dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, because Trump didn't.
Trump was busy. And so Rudy apparently has been going to these memorial dinners every year, and obviously this year was the 20th anniversary. And they're usually apparently quite kind of solemn affairs. And he might have been very drunk.
Oh, okay.
Or just, I don't know, incredibly disrespectful in many ways.
Yeah.
But it was fucking nuts. So I thought I'd get a few excerpts from that instead.
Right.
And you can decide which of these is not something that Rudy Giuliani said at a dinner memorialising those who died on 9/11.
Yeah. Nice. Any of which could be passed off by as being a Trumpism.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's it. Oh, you don't think he's thinking about running?
Oh God.
No.
So statement number one.
Yeah.
He's talking about General Milley here, but he calls him Miley for some reason. So Miley, how the hell's that guy a general? Jesus. The other day he said the Bagram Air Force Base is not strategically important. I wanted to grab his, what is it, 5 stars, 10 stars, 12 stars. He had so many stars, they're coming up into his ears. I wanted to grab his stars and shove it down his throat and say, it's 400 miles from China, asshole. China is going to be our enemy for the next 40 years. You have an airbase 400 miles from them and you're giving it up. Idiot.
Okay.
Statement number two, and the important thing to know about this one is that he does an impression of the Queen of England. during this bit.
Really? Oh, my God.
He said, I don't want to sound like a name dropper, but I told this to the Queen of England. She said, you did a wonderful job on September 11th, and therefore I'm making you an honorary knight commander of the royal something or other. I turned down a knighthood, because if you took a knighthood, you had to lose your citizenship. I know Prince Andrew is very questionable now. I never went out with him, ever. Never had a drink with him. Never was with a woman or a young girl with him.
Okay. Right. And you never know when you might bump into Sacha Baron Cohen dressed as somebody else. Yeah.
And statement number three.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah.
I was basically in charge of the FBI in New York. Not, you know, but they deferred to me because the five families would only deal with me. They were some tough guys. We got along, but they would kill you as soon as look at you. I didn't take any shit from them. You know, Matty Ionello would... People would just do whatever he said because he had this look, and they knew if they didn't do it, they would wake up with a bullet in their head. But he would deal with me, and mostly he was a good guy.
Okay. Yeah. See, that one is sufficiently ordinary that it could actually be him because he's just boasting about the New York thing. Oh, I'm just going to go back to China as China. Kind of, don't move from China. Okay. Okay. The amount of job is similar to something or other. Yeah. You see, they're all just comedy Giuliani, aren't they? All of them. If you're going to write Giuliani, you just write any of those, he'd do them. Okay, I quite like the Queen of England one. Just on the, you've lured me in there with the idea that he might be making an impression of the Queen. So that could be suspiciously not real. Basically charging the FBI. Okay, call me an idiot, but I think number, what's my score? Number three is the one you made up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
I think probably number two.
Okay.
Just now, I want to hear the impression of the
question. I would say that listeners may wonder how it's possible that you haven't heard all of these. And to be honest, if Mark hadn't been in a field on the Isle of Wight for the last week, I would have worried that he's probably already seen this speech because it's been all over the news.
All right.
But, this number two was indeed real.
No way.
I don't want to sound like a name dropper, but I told this to the Queen of England. She said, you did a wonderful job on September 11th. And therefore, I'm making you an honorary knight commander of the royal something or other. I turned down a knighthood because if you took a knighthood, you had to lose your citizenship. I know Prince Andrew is very questionable now. I never went out with him. Ever. Never had a drink with him. Never was with a woman or a young girl with him.
No. Actually, he sounded very much like Tom Jones. Yeah.
It's always a good look when you have to just out of nowhere say, I have never had a drink with Prince Andrew.
No, never done that. No. And he's got, and he's a much better cruise ship stand up comic than Trump is, really. What the fuck?
Yeah.
He kind of like, he went down that rabbit hole. He kind of went, oh, yeah, no, I didn't take a knighthood. Oh, no, Prince Andrew. Oh, no, he's royal. Oh, no, never do me. No.
On to say he was bringing Prince Andrew up because he was claiming that Prince Andrew told him, Mummy wants to make you a knight. he said this. And, he said he claims he turned down the knighthood because he didn't want to lose his US citizenship, which is bullshit. That's not what happens. No. Yeah, it's true that you can't
call yourself a sir.
Make non-British citizens knights, but you can give them honorary knighthoods. But they don't say, if you give up your US citizenship and become a UK citizen, we'll make you a knight.
You can be a sir.
That's not how that works.
No, it doesn't work.
They just say, we'll give you an honorary knighthood.
Yeah.
Yeah, that offer is not put out there.
No, that's right. Well, because Sir Bob Geldof has got one, but he's Irish.
Actually, what happens is, if having been given an honorary knighthood, you later become a UK citizen. Mm-hmm. Like Terry Wogan, for example, popular mm-hmm. Irish talk show host.
Yeah.
He was given an honorary knighthood when he was still an Irish citizen.
Yeah.
But he lived in the UK for a long time, became a UK citizen. And at that point, you are then allowed to... It gets converted into a real knighthood and you can call yourself Sir Terry Wogan. Right. Yeah. So if Rudy wanted to move to the UK and live here for a bit, please don't.
Don't do that.
And became a UK citizen. Then he could start calling himself Sir Rudy.
Yeah, and you can hang out with Andrew.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
Yeah. He did an impression of the Queen.
A cracking one it was, too.
At a September 11th memorial dinner. And you also think number one
my God.
Is real? Yeah,
Miley, good old
Miley. And number one
is
real.
Miley? How's that guy a general?
What the hell?
Jesus. The other day, he said that the Bagram Air Force Base is not strategically important. I wanted to grab his, what do you have, 5 stars, 10 stars, 12 stars? He has so many stars that come into his ears. I wanted to grab his stars, shove it down his throat, and say, it's 400 miles from China, asshole! China is going to be our enemy for the next 40 years. You have an air base 400 miles from them, and you're giving it up, idiot!
I would pay everything I own to see Rudy Giuliani grab Mark Milley and call him an arsehole. He would survive about 2 seconds.
Yeah. No, he wouldn't even put, that kind of the usual sweat drip of black dye wouldn't even make it out of the end of the hair before he was flat on his back.
No way.
And remember, folks, this is at a dinner
memorializing
the people that perished and those who survived and the families thereof and the first responders of the 9/11 events.
Milley did say that Bagram Air Force Base wasn't strategically important because this is in Afghanistan. They are pulling out. Yep. That's the whole fucking point, is they're pulling out of Afghanistan. If you keep the Air Force Base, you haven't pulled out of Afghanistan.
That's the thing. And I think it was Rudy's old boss that suggested that.
Well, he knows more than the generals, doesn't he? But yes, it technically is 400 miles from the Chinese border, but it's the west border of China. There's nothing fucking there.
Yeah.
Everything in China,
all the active stuff,
all the population centers, all the military bases, all the air bases are in the south and the east of China. And the US also has bases in South Korea and Japan and places that are near the stuff in China.
Yeah. Because there's about as much again until you reach stuff from the
It's easily 1,500 miles from Bagram before you get to anything military or like a population centre of more than a million people, for example. Which means that indeed he did not say number three. He did talk about the mob and Matty Iannello. In fact, he went on a much more profane rant about it and did impressions of mobsters, including Matty Iannello, doing kind of disagreement about garbage routes and stuff. And it was fucking nuts. This was one of those times I couldn't write anything that was as nuts. I just couldn't come up with something.
No, you can think of anything, and he's done it already. Oh my God. Well, I hope they didn't pay him to do that. No.
It was bizarre.
Well, kind of in a way, no wonder Trump was out of town.
Yeah. And then people said, look, Rudy was obviously three sheets to the wind. And he was like, I was not drunk, which I think is worse. Like if you're...
Yeah.
No, when I did an impression of the Queen of England, emphatically denied ever being with a young girl with Prince Andrew, did impressions of mobsters. I was
cold,
totally sober.
Soda. Yeah. and I'm not going to take the get out that you've just offered me. I'm just going to vehemently deny that I was drunk and say that maintain that I was sober as a judge. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I knew exactly what I was saying every second of that four-hour rant. Oh, my God.
Which means that you are now on 36 out of 73, which is 49.3%. If you get the next one right, you're on 50%.
Flipping heck. There you go. You see, I can be the winner because I'm ready to win.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called Sovereign Citizens Are Not a Logical Fallacy.
Oh, this is brilliant.
It is fucking amazing. And this is, yeah, I mean, if you are a listener of Opening Arguments, and why aren't you, if you're not, yeah. you probably know what sovereign citizens are. But this was raised by one of the January 6th insurrectionists called Pauline Bauer. Actually, sorry, colon Pauline dash dash hyphen asterisk Bauer of the House Bauer or something like that. Because sovereign citizens don't believe that they are the people who they're named as or their birth certificate says or something.
Yeah.
Because that's... Well, we'll get into it. But anyway, this person or this entity who represents the name of the person filed a 114-page briefing with the court when... she was basically taken to court for trespass, essentially, of breaching the Capitol, and has... I mean, none of it makes any sense, really. It's full of typos, it's full of even more bullshit, and mostly she is claiming that the court doesn't have any jurisdiction over her, and also she didn't do anything wrong, and also the stuff she did she was allowed to do because of various laws that she isn't completely sure apply. And it's just a really impressive amount of bullshit all in one place. And the thing is that she isn't accused of violence or breaking stuff, essentially. She's only, I think, accused of trespass, essentially. Well, there's various things, but they're all misdemeanors, I believe, that she's accused of, so she isn't accused of a felony. The people are accused of the same kinds of things that she is have mostly been making deals, because there's like 600 of them.
Right.
And so while the people who did bad stuff and smashed stuff and hurt people are being charged with worse crimes and being taken to court, the bulk of the insurrectionists are essentially being pled out to give them probation, because there's just such a lot of them, and what they did was largely trespass. But she has chosen not to go that route. She's chosen instead to fight this on the grounds that they aren't
on the basis that
entitled to...
Yeah.
Accuse her of this stuff.
Of this stuff, because she's a free living soul.
A creation of a vessel.
An ambassador of Christ. A vessel,
And so based on that, now she is essentially, I think now she's been taken into prison. She's her pre-trial release that was kind of given to everyone as standard has been revoked. Because it's clear that she isn't prepared to abide by any kind of laws, because she doesn't think they apply to her anyway.
Yeah, well, she says that no truth or fact may be tried in court at some point in her submission to the court. And then, but apart from the fact that some of the truth is that she posted pictures of herself, breaking into, trespassing, actually doing the thing of which her vessel that she occupies is being accused. So you think, all right, well, we're not trying the facts, we're just pointing them out. And that in this land that we, our vessels wander about in, we've decided collectively, either by talking about it or electing people that then talk about it, we've decided that if you break into somewhere you shouldn't be, then people will tell you off for that.
There is a great, you know, there's a great video of a different sovereign citizen case, because part of what they try and do with these arguments is get out of paying taxes. Part of it is things like driving without insurance or driving licenses and things like that, because they don't think they apply to them. And there was this guy in court who I'll find the video and I'll link it in the show notes. The guy was had been multiple times arrested for driving without a license and claimed that he wasn't the person, whatever his name was, Jeff or whatever. He was the entity or the, I don't know, it was something else anyway, not the person. He wasn't the person. He was something else. He was the vessel or the living whatever. So the judge was going, okay, so let me get this straight. And he worked out all of the things that were the right things to say to him, the entity or whatever. And he said, so I'm going to put, you know, I'm sending you to prison basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you see the person, Jeff, tell him he's going to prison too.
Brilliant.
Great.
Yeah, because there's one bit in there which he says, where she's saying, I do not consent to contract with a standby attorney, as I fired her twice. And then he says, any contract signed by one party and autographed by the other is void because a legal fiction cannot mix with a lawful fact. The parties to a contract must be of the same kind.
Yeah, so this is a big thing in sovereign citizenship, is that you can't have a contract between a person and a corporation, right?
Right.
And and they believe, I mean, there's lots of weird stuff that they believe in. It's sometimes internally contradictory, and not all of them believe the same stuff.
Right.
But one of the things that many of them believe is that your name, essentially, you're not that person. You are a separate living entity who is kind of identified by that name,
right?
But the person who is like under all the laws and has your birth certificate and all of that stuff, is a separate thing. And you essentially are a corporation, and that means that a corporation and a person. So if the lawyer, who is a person, no, they are a corporation,
right? Yeah,
because they're using their name that's on their birth certificate.
Oh, okay.
And but the sovereign citizen, is not a corporation or a person,
right?
And so they can't enter into a contract together, because only people can enter into contract with people, and only corporations can enter into contracts with corporations,
right?
Which is incidentally bullshit. As anyone who's ever
made that up,
anyone who's ever signed a contract with Apple or any business
downloaded
at all
an app on your phone, knows that,
But essentially, in 1933, the US became bankrupt, according to these people.
Okay,
But at that point, the US, to get out of debt, sold as collateral all of their citizens.
Right.
To a shadowy cabal of globalist bankers.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Those guys.
They mean the Jews.
Shadowy cabal.
And so your birth, the name on your birth certificate, which is in the US, it's often in all caps.
Right.
The birth certificate names prior to a certain date. They're not all. They're not now, and they're not. Not all of them were before,
right?
But really, they were basically because old typewriters tended just to have capital letters, so they used those. The argument is that in the name that is in all caps on your birth certificate is therefore not you. It is a corporation that has been collateralized and sold to this shadowy cabal of globalist bankers. And somehow, like step two, something else, step three, profit, is if you understand this, your birth certificate is now suddenly worth anywhere from hundreds of thousands to billions of dollars.
Oh, okay. Right.
And yet you, it's like a prepaid kind of debit card. You can get out of any debt. You don't, you can't accrue debt essentially if you, if you understand this stuff.
Yeah.
You can just use your birth certificate.
Right. Okay.
I don't think anyone's ever successfully done
that. No, because surely the people that you're trying to buy a house or
a hamburger or whatever,
or a satellite, with, they've got to understand it as well, to the extent that they go, well, yeah, forget about Bitcoin. We're talking about birth certificates here. Have you got a whole birth certificate? Oh, my God, really? I've only got like a 1/25th of a Bitcoin. It's taken me 5 years to accrue it. But you've got an entire birth certificate. Well, yeah, come on in. Pick a yacht. Yeah.
But there's so many inconsistencies and weird stuff here. Because even if you agree with everything they say...
Right. They don't like that. Right.
If you were... if you, as a person or as an entity or whatever in your the name that's on your birth certificate were used as collateral for a loan, how are you somehow entitled to money out of that?
Because who are you to be?
Take out a mortgage and my house is put up for collateral, my house isn't rich, my house doesn't have money somehow, or is entitled to money. Nobody's getting money. Where's that money coming from?
Oh, and isn't this the same bunch of people that suggested that because the US is now a corporation and sold its soul, that Biden isn't the president and that the actual election was going to take place after January the 6th?
I think it might have been an offshoot of them that thought that, but basically I think that some of them at least don't think there's been a president since, depending on who you ask, either Lincoln or Washington.
Oh, okay. Bloody hell. Right.
Because something there.
because
it's not completely clear.
Yeah. I sensed that. Okay.
So because of the birth certificate thing, that's why they will. That's why when this person, Pauline Bauer, kind of wrote at the beginning of her argument to the court, she put, "I, me, Pauline from the House of Bauer."
Okay.
Instead of "I, Pauline Bauer."
Yeah.
And when she kind of they don't sign their names, like that was what it was saying about an autograph. You know, you can't use an autograph if you're a corporation or an entity or whatever it is. So they use like thumbprints, ideally in blood, but red ink will do. Or black ink, that's corporation stuff.
Okay. So it's like being House Harkonnen or House Atreides, isn't it? Okay.
And she continued, "I challenge the court's jurisdiction over me, a living woman, one of we the people, creator of government. My status is clearly defined in my notice of special appearance that has already been filed as free, living soul, sui juris, jus soli, an ambassador of Christ, attorney in fact." None of that is a thing. "I demand that this be a constitutional court of record, that there will be no presumptions, assumptions, no tacit agreements, no waiver of rights, no subversion of rights, no hearsay, no lawyering or attainment from the bench."
What is attainment?
Your guess is as good as mine.
If you're an attorney at law, do you do attainment? Is that what that is?
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
Her argument was essentially, I'm not the entity or the name that you have accused of this crime. And this is a thing when sovereign citizens appear in court. I recommend going on YouTube and typing sovereign citizen, just looking at some of the court cases that come up. They film a lot of them and put them on, and they're just all hilarious. when they appear in court, they say, because one of the first things they say is, you know, "Are you this person? Is this your name?" And they say, I'm not that person. I'm appearing in their place as their kind of representative.
Right. Okay.
And then there's like a half hour section where the judge tries to figure out what the fuck this person is talking about.
Yeah, I'm being held on their behalf in their place. Right, I occupy the same space as them. Yeah.
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 I am the living entity known by that name. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I just take yes? As righto.
And they have this weird thing where they think that all the courts now are somehow under maritime law. Especially if the flag in the court has a gold fringe around it,
right,
that means it's a maritime court. And okay, not, in fact, the district court of, you know, Chicago.
Right. Yeah.
So that means it's under maritime law, and which laws they think apply are wildly inconsistent. Okay. And
not just all the wet ones.
No, you talk about double standards. There's no word for the number of standards they have for which laws apply and why.
Did you get past quintuple?
They're big on the Magna Carta, which isn't even a US thing.
Mm-hmm.
they believe in the Uniform Commercial Code, which is for businesses. They think that's important.
Right.
But they are not okay. And they're like the kind of, you know, whatever law governed the Louisiana Purchase or whatever stuff, shit like that. It's just kind of like, I've found a definition of this word in this kind of 80-year-old law dictionary, and therefore I've decided that's what it means.
So when they are a sovereign nation unto themselves, or whatever they're called,
a sovereign citizen. Mm-hmm. But essentially what they're saying is, you know, the US can't do anything to me because I am sovereign. I am a separate country unto myself.
It reminds me of a story that my friend told me over the weekend, that there was an offshore building, I don't know, some sort of sea defence that was outside
sea
of...
Land.
Yes, exactly, outside of the United Kingdom, sufficiently offshore to be not a part of the United Kingdom and was its own sovereign nation, had its own passport.
Uh-huh. They've desperately been trying to get recognition by the UN for ages.
Right, yeah. You know, they're somewhere down there below Gaza, aren't they? You know, they're kind of, you know, the Palestinian occupied territories, probably slightly further up the list than Sealand. But apparently the Versace, who died under mysterious circumstances, was apparently killed by, or was associated in, you know, with his death by somebody who had a forged Sealand passport. and they kind of went, so they couldn't check. If you'd have checked, you'd realise there's only four citizens of the entire sovereign nation. Yeah, there you go. That's what it reminds me of. It's that kind of, I am a nation unto myself, and therefore your laws don't apply to me. But then what you would need to point at are the kind of agreements that the US has with other sovereign nations and say, okay, those things we need to apply to me. But more double standards. Yeah, that doesn't, no, that all the agreements you have with other sovereign nations don't apply to me because I am one. My name is Legion, for I am many.
Yeah.
You know, you might be a sovereign nation of one, but you're a crazy motherfucker with about five different personalities. Yeah. Yes.
But law enforcement people and the FBI and the police view the sovereign citizens as potentially dangerous. It's all a bit of fun and games until they decide that the laws that don't apply to them mean that they can
do what they like.
Do what they like.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And so they do treat them essentially as kind of potential terrorist threats.
Right.
And the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, who tracks kind of hate groups, they estimate there are 100,000 citizens, like Americans, who are actual sovereign citizen believers who really think this stuff is true.
Yeah.
Depending on you know, which one of them and which stuff.
They're like the crazy branch of of QAnon, really.
Yeah, it's no crazy.
There's an overlap.
But they also say there's about 200,000, so twice as many, who are just like doing it for a laugh,
right,
to try and get out of paying taxes and like, speeding tickets and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's brilliant. All you'd need is like you just need a little crib sheet, wouldn't you? It's like being a an honorary Jedi. You don't have to do all the training, all that mucking about in swamps trying to lift X-wing fighters out of the water. You can forget all that. You just carry a card that says Jedi on it, and you go, "Oh, you're Jedi. Yeah, these are not the Jedis we're looking for." Yeah.
But this woman, Pauline Bauer, this living entity, she
is free
appears
to
believe it because she seems to be prepared to give up.
Go the whole way.
For it. And the weird thing is, I mean, as with all conspiracy theories and things like this, crazy people, is that this has never worked for anyone. And despite the fact it's never worked for anyone, and there's copious evidence of it not working on video...
Yeah.
It doesn't affect anything they believe. It doesn't seem to
keep
make them
going
think.
Because
they think there's these magic words they can say to a court that will mean the court suddenly has to kind of play by their rules.
Yeah. Well, she's done, and that's what she's done. This entire deposition is full of magic words. It's hocus pocus. It's a spell. You know, she says, "I do not plead with the court. I do not plead guilty. I do not plead not guilty. I declare my innocence." So you think, "Oh, well, that's your plea then."
Yeah. It reminded me of a thing we talked about, I think, during one of our Q episodes, where there's this weird idea on the right, or particularly with QAnons, I guess, where they can tell you that the left or the cabal or the, you know, Illuminati did something in a particular way because that was how they needed to do it to fulfill a certain law that applies to them.
Yeah.
And at the time we were like, well, why, you know, they are talking about these people eating babies and doing lots of stuff which is against the law.
Yeah.
And then saying, well, here's why they did this, because the law requires them in this particular way to do it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have got away with it. Like, why are they picking which laws to follow?
Which bit, yeah.
So you've got and, to, then, you can, and then stringently sticking to that.
To that bit. Yeah, you can do the eating babies bit, but, you know, driving too fast in a school zone, you know. Yeah, no, you do so that.
So they reckon that the law, the courts are constantly and knowingly just making stuff up and doing it, you know, based on consent, based on the fact that people don't know they're lying.
Right.
But if you say the right words in the right order, the court will be compelled to stop doing that and set you free somehow.
And reveal the fact that, you're right. We're only doing this because people...
Yeah. Because no one ever asked before.
No one ever asked. That's right. Yeah. Crucifixion. No. Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they said, I've done nothing wrong. I could go free. Oh, well, off you go then. No, I'm only kidding. Yeah. Yes. Wow. So, yeah, because at some point she asks whether they're doing it because they claim to derive your authority over me from the United States of America statutes, code, ordinances, bylaws of a corporation. Please list the authorities where you exercise them. Well, you just have to go, well, let's just look at the Constitution. You know, there's a whole list there. They're practically the Ten Commandments of the US. Just, there you go. Any of those, that's the authority. You know, but the authority invested in me by we the people.
Or like Federalist Paper number 15, where Alexander Hamilton said, the Constitution places everyone personally under federal authority.
Well, there you go.
That'll do. Just that works.
Just that bit. Yeah.
There's so lots of other bits too.
There you go.
But that'll
hold
do
that up. Yes. And that's been around quite some time. You know, and the whole of the courts are kind of going, oh, yeah, what have we been doing? We've been labouring under misapprehension all this time. I'm so glad you, Pauline of the House of Bauer, House of Trades, have pointed this out to us. You've made us aware of the error of our ways, and we're grateful to you. Court is, you know, case dismissed. Court adjourned. In fact, I'm going to retire now.
Case
closed. Throw off these vestments of artificiality and go do something worthwhile. Yes, in the sovereign state of the House of Bower. Yeah, absolute bollocks. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Well, we've got to the part of the pandemic where the Republicans are convinced they're in a battle of wits with the dread pirate Roberts and are determined not to fall victim to one of the classic blunders. John Nolte of Breitbart has decided that the reason leftists like Howard Stern, CNN, Biden, Pelosi and Fauci are trying so hard to convince everyone to take the vaccine, and in Stern's case at least, mocking the idiot refuseniks, is because they want to manipulate Trump voters into not taking the vaccine so that they'll die.
Righto.
Yes, at first, this sounds like the twisted logic of a scared Sicilian, but hear him out. You see, if Howard Stern ridicules people for not getting vaccinated, all his loyal Republican listeners are going to say, fuck you, Howard Stern, I'm specifically going to not get vaccinated because you made me feel stupid. And then they'll end up on a ventilator to own the libs. Right. The weird thing is, there are definitely some Trump voters who are avoiding basic health measures, not wearing masks, not getting vaccinated, eating horse paste, etc., to own the libs. Because owning the libs was the main, let's face it, only policy of their god emperor. But the fact that they think we're tricking them into it is just because they can't conceive of someone who isn't trying to kill people who disagree with them.
That's the Moebius strip of logic, isn't it?
They know we know they know we know.
Yeah, and yet they're doing it in order to outsmart us a third time round so that we don't know that they know we know they know. Yeah. As Jim mentioned, I've returned from a weekend's music festival on the Isle of Wight, where 50,000 healthy, vaccinated and certified COVID-free people happily mingled listening to live music in the sunshine. Oddly, though, Nicki Minaj didn't play. And now, thanks to Tucker Complete Bollocks Carlson, I know why. As Carlson reported last Monday, Nicki's cousin's friend's testicles had swollen up as a result of the COVID jab, which of course outweighs any success that might be claimed by the lack of any reported cases of ball ache by the organisers of any large event. Good old Tucker was so grabbed by this man's scrotal woes that he reported on it all week, seizing on Nicki's tweet telling the tale of how this friend of her cousin in Trinidad was weeks away from getting married and now the girl called off the wedding, so just pray on it and make sure you're comfortable with your decision and not bullied. Correcting the story on day two to apologise for spreading misinformation, that it was her cousin and not her cousin's friend whose sack was engorged, they went on day three to invite the actual man himself on the show, imploring him to come and talk bollocks in person. When Fox is doing outreach to get another set of inflamed meat clackers to wave in front of your face during Carlson's primetime slot, it really is time to rethink your viewing habits, America.
The weekend saw a number of Trump supporters gather in front of the Capitol for the Justice for J6 rally to protest the fact that insurrectionists are being held accountable. I mean, three is a number, right? Okay, it was more than three, but significantly less than the 1,000 that were promised. The Capitol Police, who were out in force, estimated about 400 people showed up, but more than half were members of the press. Reporters were literally queuing up to interview protesters because there weren't enough protesters to go round for everyone. The reason for the pitiful attendance is yet more battle of wits style overthinking from the right. I mean, in retrospect, it's probably their own fault for creating a group made up entirely of credulous, paranoid conspiracy theorists, and the outcome is inevitable if you think about it. But the right wing nuts decided that their rally that they organised might actually be a false flag designed to entrap Trump supporters into committing violence. Since showing up and not committing violence was apparently not an option, they stayed home. Honestly, I wasn't expecting overthinking things was going to be a problem for Trump supporters.
There you go. Yeah. This month, of course, saw the 20th anniversary of the events of 9/11, a time for somber reflection on the part of presidents and ex-presidents who were in office at the time and since, visiting Ground Zero in Pennsylvania and meeting with the families of those who were lost and those who survived, hopefully learning lessons from their responses and hoping for future more peaceful times. Oh, yeah. And then there's Trump. Whilst he turned down the invitation to Ground Zero, he did pop up in New York to talk to first responders about himself and his veiled plans for 2024, and then spent the day in Florida, commentating on a pay-per-view boxing match slash turning it into his own rally and attending a Unification Church event hosted by the widow of the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, praising them both for their incredible story. You know, the one about how they started a dangerous authoritarian mind control cult 50 years ago that is still operating. He then did his own bit of ongoing mind control and made up some history about how he averted a dangerous situation in Korea, lumping himself in with Moon's widow, whom he thanked for her incredible work on behalf of peace all over the world. Yeah, with tone-deaf, selfless peace like theirs. Dot, dot, dot.
According to Bob Woodward and Robert Costa's latest book, Peril, General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, was worried that Trump might start a nuclear war because the 2020 election didn't go his way. Milley apparently took steps to avoid that, including calling the Chinese to say, "We are not going to attack you," which is a fun call to get out the blue. If I was the Chinese, I might be thinking, "I didn't think you were going to attack us, but now I kind of think maybe you are." Obviously, a revelation of this magnitude shocked everyone, with the left distressed at how close we might have come to a nuclear war because of a petulant man-child having a bad day, and the right furious that the country's highest general might have tried to stop the petulant man-child from killing us all. Trump responded on Sean Spicer's Newsmax TV show, "First of all, if it is actually true, which is hard to believe, that he would have called China and done these things and was willing to advise him of an attack or in advance of an attack, that's treason." No, you fucking maniac. Warning them of an attack would only even possibly be treason if you were actually going to attack them. And he didn't warn them of an attack. He told them they weren't going to be attacked. Of course, if the Chinese military were anything like the Republicans, they may have assumed that was a daring double bluff and decided to drink from the glass that was in front of them.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott, you know, the one who's enacting SB 8 that effectively provides a $10,000 bounty to people who snitch on anyone helping anyone get an abortion after 6 weeks. Yeah, him. Well, when asked why would he allow victims of rape to have to carry to term, replied, "Rape is a crime, and Texas will work tirelessly to make sure that we eliminate all rapists from the streets by aggressively going out and arresting them and prosecuting them and getting them off the streets." White House press officer Jem Psaki, when asked about Abbott's extravagant claim, replied, "If Governor Abbott has a means of eliminating all rapists or all rape from the United States, then there would be bipartisan support for that. But given that there has never in the history of the country, in the world, been any leader who has ever been able to eliminate rapists from our streets, it is even more imperative. It is one of the many reasons, I should say, not the only reason, why women in Texas should have access to health care." Not wanting to fall into the ignoring linear time fallacy, but oddly, Abbott did not explain why he had not previously eliminated all rapes from Texas if he has the power to do so now. "The rest of the world needs your power too, Greg. Come on, share it. Don't be a fool." Oh no, it's too late.
Defence Secretary Antony Blinken was on the Hill last week to answer questions about the difficult evacuation and controversial withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. But Idaho GOP Senator Jim Risch had a more urgent question.
"Somebody in the White House has authority to press the button and stop the president, cut off the president's speaking ability and sound. Who is that person?"
What the fuck is he talking about, you may ask? Well, you'll be shocked to hear this, but it's all based on a Republican's conspiracy theory. Yes, the latest one, well, as of this recording, there'll probably be six more before breakfast, is that when Biden is about to say something his handlers don't like, they can cut his mic. This seems to be entirely based off a video clip of a briefing on wildfires that Biden was given in Boise, Idaho, and the clip ends after Biden says, "Can I ask you a question?" Pretty inflammatory stuff, I think you'll agree. You can see why the handlers in the other room all leaped to press the button. Anywho, it turns out that it's just that the event was what's called an out-of-town pool spray, which means the briefing is for Biden, not for the cameras, but the out-of-town press pool that follows him around is allowed into the room for a bit to get some photos and footage for the news later. They don't film the whole thing. Yeah, kind of boring explanation, really. Like learning how a magic trick works, it's always more interesting to just watch the trick and ignore reality.
In a blinding flash of realisation this week, Boris got rid of his entire cabinet, resigned his office and demanded that Dominic Raab be personally sent to Afghanistan to apologise to every single person he didn't get out in time. No, of course not. Boris, never keen to be seen to be in touch or accountable and ever keen to avoid any kind of scrutiny or demand that he actually govern, merely reshuffled the cabinet, which is a bit like continuing to play with the same cards on the longest losing streak Caesar's Palace has ever experienced, in the belief that the marks everyone can see on the back of the five, queen and ace will eventually wear away. So was Rob snapped over his own knee and marched backwards through 7 leagues of shit, banished to the back benches and never seen again? Nope. He was made Minister of Justice in charge of ensuring the independence and neutrality of the law, and also Deputy Prime Minister in charge of bending every law in the land to ensure Boris remains king long enough to spawn an entire village of midwich cuckoos to take over the world. But it's all right, because King Rollo assures us that there's no food shortage even when you see empty supermarket shelves, nor will there be a lack of beer despite the shortage of CO2 imports to make it fizzy, nor is the price of energy to cook your non-existent cancelled Christmas turkey going up, because there are no longer bargains to be had from suppliers dealing with a single enormous European trading bloc. Like Lord Haw-Haw broadcasting on the BBC from a bunker somewhere in Central Europe in the war, we're being laughed at by toffs. Except Boz is supposed to be on our side. I just hope Jenny O'Cruery can keep imagining a brick wall for long enough until the bomb goes off and kills them all. Peace and love, everyone.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our strawman level patrons Max Beaver, Kaz Tui, Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan. And our top true Scotsman level patron Lauren. Thank you so much, everyone. We really do appreciate your support.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/FallaciousTrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.